It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 616. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Have a jam-packed show. Have some stories from the trenches, including Easter Sunday client emergencies that I'm going to talk about. And then the big topic for tonight is the first email that's going to kick off a discussion on home networking tips. Actually, it's going to be the last email, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the show talking about that. I have a few emails to get to. I want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of this show. That is the best remote control software service that you can use to help your clients remotely. Easy to connect and set up. You have options for unattended access. You even have options on collecting payment. Let's say a client just contacts you for the first time and you're going to have them remote in. You actually have a button that you can accept payments for that service call. You can get Instant House Call free for 15 days to try it out at instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Instant House Call and TechSite Builder bring you the 2017 Unconvention in Washington, D.C., September 16th and 17th. That Unconvention is sponsored by Malwarebytes TechBench. That tool set is an all-in-one package of utilities to help you diagnose, repair, and secure Windows PCs. The Unconvention, it's our second year. I'm going to be part of the keynote presentation. I'm also doing one of the labs on the best tools to use for solving problems and helping your business. There's a tremendous amount of great content for you, the business owner of your repair business, your consulting business, that will definitely help be able to provide better service to your clients, to be able to get more business and a chance for networking with like individuals where you can discuss the common problems, maybe find out better sources for some of your hardware and software, get to meet some of the sponsors who and the vendors that we're going to have there that will get you a better relationship with them. You need to act now to save money because at the end of April, the price is going up for tickets. So there's a limited amount of tickets available and you can lock in the early bird special for $200 a ticket. After the end of April, that price is going to go up. You want to do that now? Go to www.unconvention.io. So I thought I was going to have an easy, relaxing Easter Sunday with the family and the grandkids. And my phone, to me, it's early when it's ringing at 9 a.m., especially on a Sunday. I like to sleep in if I don't have any client work. I got a phone call. The client is an employee of one of my clients that is a sports memorabilia wholesaler. He tried to remote in. He uses Instant House Call subaccount to connect and he couldn't connect. And he was like, wow. And he had to get these last orders completed. And he usually does that from his home system, remoting into the office. He goes in to the / warehouse office, everything had restarted and the server was making a beeping, yelling sound and an error message that one of the drives failed in the RAID array. That server is a domain controller that supplies the DNS, DHCP. So that's why his workstation wasn't up and online. He couldn't get out to the internet. Everything's down. I get the panic phone call and I walk him through successfully booting. The first thing I want him to do is literally pull the power plug and let's let things settle down. Now, there was a power outage the night before, we figured out. And so the server outlasted the UPS, went down hard. Upon going down, a drive failed. Once we came back up, I had him hit F1 to continue with one drive bad. There's four drives. I believe it's still an old RAID 5. So one of the drives failed. So now it's operating on three drives. Definitely slower, not the peak performance that it was, but at least he was up and running. Once that became up and running, I had him reboot the workstations. He was able to log into the software. Everything was working. And then I had to log in and see that I could get in, that their main software was working. Then determined that one of the drives is bad. I ordered one of the replacement drives. And now this Saturday, I'll be spending putting in one of the a new drive and then having the RAID array rebuild. Then I'm also meeting with the owner because he's moving. Now, I got a big move tomorrow with one of my clients, and the we've already like started setting up the new office. The new office is wired. There's a new HP ProCurve switch that's all configured. NetCarrier's already moved some of their phone gear, that it's going to be very easy to at least migrate the phone systems, and they'll have a very minimum downtime. And as a matter of fact, before the show tonight, my client checked in with me to just go over some of the pieces and what we're going to do. So that's tomorrow. I got to talk about this big move for this client where the server drive failed. Spent a couple hours on Easter morning with taking care of that. Then I get a panic text message from one of my attorney clients who's working on an important brief, and he's got to email it to someone, and he's remoted in to his workstation at work, and Outlook keeps crashing. And I get the text, "I'm so sorry to bother you, Mike, on Sunday, but I need some help." I was like, okay. So I remote into the workstation. It is malware ridden. That's why Outlook was crashing. So did a deep cleaning, then got Outlook up and running, contacted him, and he was fine. So then rest of the Easter's okay. And then Easter night, right after dinner, so I was glad I got to enjoy dinner with the family, panic phone call from my plumber. Now, even though it's Sunday evening, the reason I will take that call is because it's my plumber. And I don't want him to not take my call if I have an emergency, no matter what it is. So clearly, when it's a Sunday evening, I'm looking at the phone. I see it's Jason. I'm like, I'm taking that call because he never calls me. His Comcast is down. I walk him through trying to reboot the Comcast modem. Said, look, you got to call Comcast. They got to have some kind of an outage. Let's see what happens. Try to get them to schedule to come out. And that's exactly what happened. And I checked in with him Monday morning. They did a truck roll and came out at 7 a.m. Monday morning. So very quick response for a residential. By 8 a.m., he was up and running. They had to do something outside, but it was on them, and it was outside his house, and they were able to fix it and get him up and running. But when he couldn't get to anything, couldn't get to the internet, panic set in, and I'm going to be the first phone call. That's fine. A logical question in the chat. Do I have a different rate? Well, normally, up until this Easter, I have not, but I do. Sunday, for the one client, I'm doing a one-time rate of time and a half. Going forward, and I'm going to notify my clients, and if I got some clients listening, they're going to be like, oh, no, well, it's not going to be too bad. I do a lot of late work on their systems. So if it's normal maintenance and I'm doing it and it's after hours, that's straight rate. But if they call me and I have to work on something special and they call me, I'm going to do my rate from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. During the week, it will be time and a half outside of those hour ranges. On weekends, it's going to be 1.75 times my rate. On holidays, it will be double time. So if I charge $125 an hour and you call me next Easter, that'll be $250 an hour. I have to do this because everybody's doing it. As a matter of fact, they don't do IT consulting, but they do business consulting. And I had to help with some contracts for a client that's evaluating. And that is consistent with the normal rates for a business, for charging for the service that we do. Their consulting rates, they were already triple my hourly rate. And then upon there, out after 5 o'clock, it's time and a half. I'm looking at that and I'm like, wow. So, I mean, just amazing numbers. I don't want to be greedy, but it also got to be fair. And if I'm giving up my holiday, it's got to be worth it. So if someone calls me on Christmas Day or New Year's Day, then it's going to be double time. That makes sense. And certainly any new clients from this moment on, that's going to be part of the contract, part of the language, any proposals, any contracts. And I'm going to slowly start to roll this out. Now, if you're already on retainer, then it'll just be that many hours off. So let's say you're on a 10-hour a month retainer and you need help in the evening and it's outside of the scope of my normal maintenance windows, then it'll be 1.5 times my hours. One of the things that I do, since I check on backups and do a lot of my normal work after hours, that's straight time. I am not going to charge for that because that's on me and that's why I'm doing it. I can get more done doing that in off hours. Taz in the chat brought up a really great question about the rate because my wife, my son, Ken, my tech, all hit me up when I talked about the client emergencies on Sunday. They said, you better be charging more for that. And, you know, I got read the riot act from all those people. I want to get to some of the other emails, and then I will get to the email that will kick off the rest of the show, which will be about home networking tips. And I put together some good links and I think some good information that may help you. First, this is from Alex, and it's about that Win7 blockade. I like how he calls that. Thanks for bringing up the Microsoft Win7 update block on Kaby Lake, Sky Lake, and Ryzen chipsets. There are multiple culprits. The half dozen motherboards and chipset designers who agreed to this fake security fiasco, and the three or four CPU manufacturers as well as Microsoft. Oh, poor Microsoft. They aren't making quite as many multi-billions of dollars if they assigned 20 coders out of 20,000 seat warmers to generate security patches for Windows 7. No, here, this is what's worse. They've already got the security patches for Windows 7. It's just if you have a newer processor, you're not allowed to get them. That I disagree with because they already have the patches. They're selectively determining new CPUs. Well, you got to go Windows 10. And I think that's wrong because Windows 7 is still an active product. As techs and IT managers, he continues, you have to deal with the Microsoft OS, like it or not. You can configure the UI and OS in ways that limit use of trade-specific applications and user access levels. Are small business owners and employees concerned about targeted advertising and personal data telemetry and indexing on its desktops? More importantly, it's the typical non-techie home user sheep who are getting privacy invaded, data mined, and marketed. Frankly, I don't care if Microsoft ever creates another utility or application for Windows 7. The free market will take care of half a billion Win7 user base. The PC gaming industry will generate titles. The GPU industry will create drivers and hardware. I don't use a single Microsoft application other than WordPad, File Explorer, and Windows 7 OS. I have one free upgrade Win10 box that is used for one website, and that's LiveLeak. I was planning a Ryzen project until I heard this. I ended my plans to build a Ryzen gaming system or any new gaming machine. I will either look into gaming with Steam or Linux, or perhaps purchasing a game console. In any case, the upside of all of this is the side effect of halting a waste of many hundreds of dollars on a PC gaming machine, plus the $150 for the OS, only to be greeted by the crack house basement window and the insulting nanny phone interface every time I start up. This is the pause that refreshes. I will rethink my future hardware projects and read more books. Alex, thanks. I know a lot of people are upset. I know my client who's getting the latest, I talked about this last week, the latest, greatest processor and system, but I'm moving him right into the Windows 10 Creators Update. So there will be no problem with, because that's really focused on features for gaming. Hopefully he will like that and everything, you know, there's not going to be a problem. Alex, thanks for the email. This is from Michael. And I asked for, what are you doing for VPNs? And for his client, he's using Zyxel, Z-Y-X-E-L, for his VPN firewall. It comes with 5 licenses for SSL VPN. It is a good bang for the buck. They have several models to choose from depending on your bandwidth needs. Thank you very much for that recommendation. This is a link that Ken sent me, and it's from PC Gamer, and it's WordPad has a major security hole. Give that a look. I'll have that in the notes. And this is from Stanley. Disappointed is the subject. I have to tell you this and see what you think. I have an early 2013 MacBook Pro Retina. I thought about upgrading the video card, which is an Intel 4000 HD. You probably know this, but I had no idea. I am unable to upgrade the video card, yes, as it's soldered onto the logic board. So I'm stuck with it. I'm very disappointed in Apple for making a computer that can't be upgraded. I didn't know that when I bought it for $1,800. Could have got a PC for half that and then been able to upgrade. I'm considering going back to a PC. Do you know anything about the Microsoft trade-in program? Is it legitimate? Thanks in advance, Stanley. I don't know of any trade-in program, but I will say this. Apple has historically been a closed system. You can't upgrade components. The best you can do is maybe swap out a hard drive, and then second, you might be you can add some RAM. That's it. You can't upgrade an Apple system. You got to know for the life of your Apple when you first purchase it. And you are going to pay what we call the Apple tax. You're going to pay a lot more money for that piece of hardware. So you better have a need for just Apple. It sounds like you never really needed an Apple. You needed a good solid PC that you could expand and work with. It all depends on what you're trying to run. What are you looking to do? And that's where you got to decide on the proper system. If you're even think that you're going to have to upgrade your system, Apple is not the choice. So you should not be buying any Mac Apple products if you're thinking of upgrading. You have to go the PC route. This is the last email, but it's going to take up the rest of the show in answering. Hi, Mike. I am a big fan of your show and appreciate what you do. Have you thought about doing a show on networking tips and troubleshooting utilities? I am about to install an in-home networking using a combination of Ethernet and wireless. Due to expenses, I'm going to start by connecting each room to ports on my all-in-one modem router. Yeah, absolutely. But would like to upgrade as I add more devices for residential networks. when would it be ideal to use a switch or simply plugging everything into the router? Keep up the good work. And this is Russell, and he's from Georgia. We have lots of things that we want to discuss. One is when I go to a network, whether it's a home or an office, I'll tell you, there's a very thin line that separates offices and homes anymore, because I have clients with far more complicated networks in their home environment because of their home office or their needs. The first thing you have to do is an assessment. How many users, what devices are they going to be using, and how are they going to be using it? Do you have a gamer in the house? If gaming is important, I have a link for tips in helping you design for optimal performance for home networking for gaming. Very, very important right off the bat. You want to take a look at that. So you have to first do an assessment of how many users and the needs. What internet service do they already have? You want the fastest internet if they're going to be doing lots of gaming, if they're going to be doing lots of multimedia online. Are they going to be doing a lot of Netflix or Amazon Prime movies? You need to assess this. Then determine, based on their budget and what their needs are, the internet connection. I always Fios first. If Verizon Fios isn't available in my area, then they have no other choice. They have to go Comcast. Because if you're in or around the Philadelphia area, outside of Philadelphia, you don't have any other option. It's Fios or Comcast. That's it. So you get what you can get. Then the different layering of speeds within each of those products. If you're Comcast, you want the product that they refer to as Blast, because that gets you the fastest internet. If you're Fios, you can go all the way up to 750 meg up and down, as low as 75 and as high as 750. And then you'll have various prices and packages and deals in between. So now, once you've determined your internet, now you got the default router. For the typical home, that's fine. But if you want better Wi-Fi capability, you have more Ethernet wired wires, then we got to start designing here and doing some things like, what are they going to be connecting? Are they PCs and Macs? Do they have Ethernet ports? If they have Chromebooks that don't have an Ethernet connection and they have tablets, they're going to be living on Wi-Fi. So you're going to need a good Wi-Fi presence. Now, where does the internet come in and broadcasting the Wi-Fi? You got to walk through and make a determination that you may have to put some more Wi-Fi access points. Now, I don't get involved in most houses with an expensive switch. So one of my recommendations, if you're going beyond the four ports on the ISP provided router, then I like inexpensive switch that's TP-Link, and it's only $20. It's an 8-port gig switch. It's inexpensive. It's a great way to get gigabyte speed on the cheap and be able to expand beyond those four ports. Now you can add 8 more. I'll use inexpensive switches where if I was in an office environment, it's going to be a managed switch. It's going to be a switch like it's going to be an HP Pro Curve or better for the office. Budget comes into play. It's all about the networking infrastructure. As you take a look at where the PCs are going to be, where the laptops are going to be throughout the house, do they have a budget that can afford wiring Ethernet wired ports to as many rooms as you can? Now, you can't do what one of my clients a couple years ago, this was a huge project. He has 42 network drops in his office. The basement area is like rivals most data centers that I have for my typical client. 42 network drops throughout this huge house. We went double Ethernet to every single room, sometimes more depending on the needs. And we also put in an extremely robust wireless solution. So this is someone that had the budget, that wanted an incredible wired network, reliable, and I put managed switches in place. He has the Fios 750 up and down. We're talking incredible network performance wherever you go, whatever device you have. Most people don't have that budget, so I use that as the extreme. Now you want to get a combination. Where are the users going to be doing most of their wireless work? Is it an outside patio? Is it a family room? Is it the bedroom? You want to put a good centralized wireless access point covering the best area that you can. If it's just a single access point, I love the ASUS. As a matter of fact, I sometimes use that for the firewall router, depending on the situation, or I use the ASUS AC router as just an access point, giving me good coverage. And it's a good bang for the buck. It's like $145. If you want superior coverage, you want to look at open mesh or Ubiquiti. It's going to cost you a little bit for each of those access points, but you'll get the great coverage that you need. So it depends on how much area. So when you're looking at home networking, sometimes there's no difference except maybe the cost of the equipment that you're going to be using for versus an office. I go through the same process. What are they going to be doing? It's a little easier for an office because we want to be wired everywhere. That usually begins with the budget-breaking item of new infrastructure wiring. As a matter of fact, tonight I have a proposal that I'm putting together for a client where they need all new wiring. It's going to be 16 new network drops. And then on top of that, they don't have a server and they want a centralized place. And I'm going to probably be recommending a good Synology device at the core so they can share files and then access them remotely via the apps that are available for Synology. And that was doing an intense interview with my client and getting all the information that I could. So you have to do the same thing with the homeowner. What are the ages of the kids? What are they going to be running? What devices are they going to be using? And you'll want to make sure you got the coverage, but then you're also got to balance that with the budget. I know I'm leaving a lot open. It's very difficult to assess except for giving you ideas and some links. And what I'm going to have, just to give you an idea for some of the links, how to create a wired network at home. It's excellent. The top tips for wireless home network setup. And this is from a site called LifeWire. Then, of course, I have how to set up your home network for optimal gaming performance. And then everything you need to know about home networking. So I got a lot of homework for you for reading on sites that I've culled through that made sense with a lot of their recommendations and giving you some things to think about. And that's when I'm kind of bringing all of the tips that you can take a look at and then determine what's best for your particular client. But the big thing is listen, ask a lot of questions, and then make good notes so you can do a proper assessment of their needs. And this is I wouldn't change how I approach a small business client the same way. I'm going to listen, what are their pain points? What are they having trouble with? And then I go to attack them within the solution. It all comes down to the wiring and the Wi-Fi. The better performance is going to be via wired. So if we can run wires to every location that they're going to have a desktop computer or a laptop that they can sit and have it wired, and then have home runs to that central location where the internet's coming in. Maybe it's the basement, maybe it's an upstairs office or somewhere's in the house. That's the point where that really becomes the data center now. That center of all the connections coming in. We want to make sure they're all in the same switch. Then we want to have a good Wi-Fi presence, and we want to sprinkle access points where it makes sense to give you the best coverage. When it comes to printers, you want to be wired versus wireless. And you got to communicate to your client, even though it's a wired printer, you can print to it wirelessly as long as it's on the same network. The worst thing you can do is start, and this is where I see a lot of problems in home networks. Somebody started putting in multiple routers and they're plugging them into the WAN port, and that WAN port now creates a secondary network. So we got a printer on one network, and then we got the users on a Wi-Fi on a totally different network. They don't know it. They think it's the same network because they're in the house, and they wonder why they can't print. Well, that's because the printer's on one network, and the device they're trying to communicate with it is on another. This is a very, very common problem. So one of the tools that I use, there's a free utility called Advanced IP Scanner that you can download. And one of the first things you want to do is an assessment. Hey, what's out there on the network now? What devices can you find? So hook your laptop up, have this software running, and get a good scan of everything. Now, there's a Net Analyzer, I believe. Let me take a look at my iPhone. I have an app that I go on the Wi-Fi of my client all the time, and it's Net Analyzer. And I've talked about this. It's very inexpensive. There's an iOS app, and there's also an Android equivalent. And this Net Analyzer, I run that on any network that I enter for the first time, and it brings back all the IP addresses and all the equipment and the manufacturer that it sees on that network. The first thing I'm looking at is the IP scheme. Then I go back and I take a look. Am I seeing all the devices as I do a visual walkthrough? And if, let's say there's three printers and they all appear to be online, but I'm only seeing two. Well, now I'll go to each printer and print their IP addresses. Just print a network status report from the printer and find out what is the IP address. This is 101 troubleshooting printing, where when I hear someone can't print, is it on the same network? Take a look at the client's workstation. Take a look at the printer's IP address. Are they on the same subnet? Because if they're not, there you go. I actually fixed a printing problem with someone I know who works for Verizon, and the Verizon office had a printing problem. The person reached out to me and said, "Mike, I can't bring you in for obvious reasons, but this is the problem we're having. Can you help me here?" And I walked them through, and that was the problem. The printer was on a different network than what he was, and it looked like, from what he described, was he was accidentally on the guest network, which had no access to the printers, which made sense. So I wanted to know what his IP address was, and then I wanted to know, okay, what's the printer IP address? And then that led me to what was going on. Do a visual assessment of the infrastructure, and then do a digital one by getting an inventory, by using an app. And then after interviewing the client, get an understanding of what they have. Take a look at all the websites that I'm going to list in the show notes, and then do an assessment of the products they'll need. Make sure you get some kind of an idea of the budget. You're not going to recommend $5,000 worth of equipment if they have a $200 budget. Budgetary constraints will definitely dictate the solution. So maybe you do it in pieces and you say that, look, we can't bite it all off at once, but let's put the one access point here. You really need a couple more to cover everything, but as you can afford it, we'll add them. You could work at a phased approach, but come up with the ultimate design for the end game, the final goal, and then work to that goal in stages that your client can afford. Russell, I hope that helps. Winston Wolf came in the chat. My son, Ryan, just got his Samsung 8 phone, and I'm looking at it. It's just a little too big, though. It's really long, which means when you turn it sideways, it's going to be great for movies. It's just a little too big, but I'm jumping off the Apple bandwagon. I am no longer drinking the Kool-Aid for Apple. My iPhone, and I'm not going to go crazy. I did a lot of ranting last week. I want it to be a phone. Yes, it's nice having the apps and everything, but it would be just tremendous to be able to successfully make a phone call on the phone. Because first and foremost, I want a phone. Everything else is secondary. So how about bringing us the features of a phone? Wouldn't that be great? All right, enough of that. You could tell how I feel about my iPhone 7. That's it. If you purchase anything from Amazon or know anybody buying from Amazon, please use my link, amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your support. No show next week, and here's why. Next Thursday night, I will be giving the presentation on my 11 cybersecurity tips for end users, and I'm giving that presentation alongside of an FBI agent. And what we're going to be doing, I already have a great one page that I'm going to make that part of the following show on May 4th. No show next week. I'll be back same time, same channel, May 4th. And it's going to be all about the security tips. And I think we're going to talk about Chromebook. And I was against Chromebooks in the beginning, but I have a new appreciation for Chromebooks. And I'm going to tell you where they fit. And for the clients that I found that are a perfect marriage for them and a Chromebook. That's it. Taz asked, no, unfortunately, this is a custom presentation for one of my clients and their customers, so cannot record it. But I'm going to do my best in reproducing what I can on the next show. That's it, everybody. See you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.